Hello, hello, hello.
Good evening.
Mazel tov.
So this is Big Planet Comics Podcast, episode 61.
Yeah.
Wow.
On our way.
We're on our way.
Something.
Home sweet home.
On our way to cancellation.
So my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
And what do we always say at the beginning of this show? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
You can follow us on the Facebook, on the Twitter, on the internet.
What's that Twitter?
At Big Planet Comics.
And follow our Tumblr.
New Tumblr effect.
Yeah, because it's tumble times.
It's tumbling.
it's time to tumble. So let me just say we got some upcoming signings and events.
Great.
Our Raina Telgemeier signing went really well.
Yep. Thanks for everyone coming.
And our
Gordon Harris
signing went really well.
Yep. Yeah. So two great signings in a row.
And then up on October 27th, we got a District Comics signing over at U Street.
Oh, yeah.
And
packed to the gills.
Yeah, indeed. And November 3rd, we got Ben Hatke, creator of Legends of Z to the Space Girl, at our Vienna and College Park stores.
Yep.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah. So what's been going on, you guys?
Nothing. Just chilling.
Well, that's not it. Is that really all that's been going on? Just chilling?
Absolutely not. I'm exhausted.
Yeah, so Nick and Jared have been working over at our U Street store a little bit.
We're doing the grand renovation. We brought in, what, 8 new bookcases, roughly, and we've reorganized the whole store, and we'll be painting some more sections, and we got grand schemes.
Yeah, things have been going on.
But yeah, it's very tiring.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys are super tired. So is that the story for both of you guys, or are you guys
pretty much
doing anything else?
I'm working like 12 hours every last 3 days.
I can't remember what's going on right now.
Other than that, really nothing too exciting. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm excited about stuff, but I can't really talk about it.
Oh, exciting.
Well,
I know it's
secret.
Are you excited about something next Wednesday?
Oh, maybe.
Like your birthday?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Happy birthday.
I'm more scared about that. My girlfriend's taking me somewhere, but she's blindfolding me.
Mystery blindfold.
Maybe she's taking you, just going to throw you in a rock quarry.
That might happen.
We can always hope. So I don't know what I've been doing.
You got to be doing something.
I was working over here by myself.
Oh,
well, that's not true.
I had
Andy.
There you go.
Who you guys might remember from us talking about Neon Super Gladiator.
I remember that.
And then people who listen to Nick and I's other podcast, which do you think we get a lot of crossover?
I don't know.
Not
but
enough. If anybody was listening to our Magnet Beam Live podcast, Andy's on that too.
Do you talk about this podcast on Magnet Beam?
I don't think so.
So we have before.
Do back and forth the cross.
This is like our nice podcast. And Magnet Beam is like our.
That's true. Sassy podcast.
Our potty mouth podcast. Yeah. So, yeah, indeed. But anyway, this is going to be kind of a short episode today since everybody's a little bit wiped out.
We're totally good. Let's do it.
But yeah, let me do. I got something that's kind of like news. Let's do this. Yeah, so our one of our listeners, Jessica, sent us something that she says, is this news?
Wait, one of our listeners, Jessica, or the listener, Jessica?
The listener, Jessica, right. The classic for our eagle-eared listeners.
Yeah, for the new listeners, they may not know.
They might not know, Jessica. Anyway,
you will.
Yeah, go back and find out.
Google it.
Yeah, but she says, is this news? This gumshoe brings you a potential hot tip. basically, she's just telling us that the Captain America sequel is going to be filming in D.C.,
What?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so that's kind of exciting, I guess.
Maybe we can be an extra.
Yeah.
Maybe all awesome. Together maybe. We can be an extra.
Maybe I could play Bucky.
We can wear a big trench coat and all three of us can go, and it'll be like in the Muppets when they go to visit Miss Piggy in Paris.
Let's do it.
It will be. Yeah.
That would be just like that.
We need that tall, strange man to be in the movie.
Yeah, so she says, but again, is this news?
Yes.
I think it's news enough.
Yeah, news to us.
I think still most of our listeners are in the D.C. area.
Yeah. And if not, come visit next year, hang out at the store, and be in the movie.
I know we've got one listener in Oklahoma on the hell last week. And we've got a listener in Manchester, England.
I want to find
one
out.
In New York.
Oh, really?
We did.
We want to hear from our farthest listener. So if you're like in Australia or something like that.
If you're anywhere not in D.C., tell us where you are.
And if you are in Australia, have you guys been watching Australian X Factor? Because it's been crazy this year.
No. You're the only one that watches every country's X Factor.
It's true. I watch like 4 different X Factors.
I have seen part of the Greek X Factor.
Oh, I wish if I understood Greek.
Wow. I don't think you need to understand Greek to appreciate the Greek X Factor.
Like, never mind, I'll find someone like you. It's like, wow. I mean, it's not that bad, but.
It sounds great.
There's definitely some accents going on.
But like at the end of X Factor, like I've never actually watched it. Do they get a job?
Yeah, usually they're just like a janitor.
I'm just like saying, like, that would be like cutthroat in Greece. That would be amazing.
They go back to being Gene Simmons' daughter.
In Greece, they get to move.
They do. They send them to Germany.
Yeah, right.
Where they love Greek people. Yeah, so that's it for the news this week. You know, it was just a little bit of news.
I like it.
Yeah, so maybe we should do some viewer mail.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Okay, so this week we've got... basically, we've been asking people to send us their examples of questions we've been asked. So,
oh, nice.
Dave Rockwell sent us something about his worst con story. Oh, nice. So somebody asked us what our worst comic book convention stories were, and here's his. He starts out by saying, does a sad antiques and collectibles con story count?
Oh, gosh.
I think so.
I think it does, too. All right, so I'm going to read
this. Is that how it's billed?
I
would not attend that convention.
Yeah, he's like, the fourth annual sad antique and collectible con. Bring all your sad friends. All right, so this is long. I'm going to try to read it without running out of breath.
Okay.
So it says, my story involves waiting to get autographs from June Lockhart from Lost in Space and Yvonne Craig, Batgirl from the old Batman show.
Nice.
They were on a break from signing things, and the line was in front of the table running by this really tall guy. He didn't seem to have much on his table, a few pictures and random Star Wars things. 20 minutes went by where I kept making awkward eye contact with the guy. People kept coming by and asking him when June and Yvonne would start signing again. Otherwise, my tall friend just sat quietly, no nibbles from anyone. Very sad. Yeah. That's what he says. I started feeling like I needed to buy something from him to cheer him up. I started looking over his options more carefully. The more I looked at the table, it became clear he wasn't a merchant booth, but he would sign something if you bought it. Apparently, I needed coffee. I couldn't figure it out. Then a guy comes up and asks the vendor, who are you? I'm Peter, comes an answer. I was in Star Wars. Peter who? Quick scan above his head, and I finally saw a sign that said, Peter Mayhew, Star Wars Chewbacca.
Oh, wow.
Now I had to get something. It's freaking Chewbacca. How could I not know I had spent the last 20 minutes looking at the man behind Chewbacca? I got him to sign a picture, but for some reason, I couldn't get past the shame of not recognizing him. I said very little. June and Yvonne came back. I got autographs, and I left quickly, crestfallen. I still kick myself for not saying more. I have a lot of questions for Chewbacca.
That's funny that he knew her, but he didn't know Chewbacca.
Well, you know, yeah. I mean...
I guess people have their... stuff that they remember.
Well, and you know, he wasn't dressed like Chewbacca.
Yeah,
he's shaved since then.
But I actually have seen Peter Mayhew at a comic convention before, and the dude looks like Chewbacca.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've seen him before. I would kind of recognize him. Like,
he's a big, shaggy guy. I used to be the biggest Star Wars nerd. I think, like, a lot of people before, you know, 1999.
Right.
Was that 1999 when Star Wars episode
something,
one came
something
out?
Like that.
Anyway, yeah, but before the dark days.
It's a blur.
So, I would recognize Jeremy Bullock.
Wow.
Just looking at him, who is the guy that played Boba Fett.
Boba Fett, of course.
Yeah, which is, you know
that's
which,
pretty nerdy.
Just the fact that you know who he is right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Let alone what he looks like.
That is a sad story.
Yeah.
So congratulations, I guess.
Well done.
Yeah, but thanks for sending in that. And we don't actually have any other questions this week.
Aww. Perfect.
Yeah, this is going to be our shortest ever episode.
I want to meet the guy that plays Snaggletooth.
wait, like the voice of Snaggletooth?
I want to know. Was that his name in the Star Wars?
I want to meet the person who plays
Snaggletooth.
Sai Snoodle. That's my favorite rock star.
I think Sai Snoodles was a puppet.
What?
I'm pretty sure.
Nope.
So you probably want to meet like Frank Oz.
Frank Oz, yeah.
Which is true, I do.
You want to meet an Imagineer.
Yes.
I'd like to meet the guy that plays Tri-Eyes.
Tri-Eyes?
Oh, yeah. Was that his name?
Of course. It's Star Wars. Of course that was his name.
Or the guy that played the Wampa?
I like that you're fine with Sai Snoodles. But
well, that's because it's a ridiculous name.
Yeah.
And you're like vaguely...
There's a lot of ridiculous names.
Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
I mean, Star-Killer.
Snaggletooth, I mean.
Yeah, indeed. Well, the worst, of course, is in Attack of the Clones. They don't actually say the guy's name, but in the credits, there's the guy that says, you want to buy some death sticks? And his name is Ilano Sleazebagano.
Oh, isn't there also a... Yak Face?
Right? Yep, there's Yak Face, who has a face like a yak.
What about Count Poop?
Wait, what? I think
the bad guy.
I think you're thinking of Pizza the Hut.
No.
Oh, wait, Count Dooku?
Oh, Count Dooku.
Count Doodoo.
Yeah, poor Christopher Lee.
I know.
All right, well, if you guys have questions about Count Doodoo, you can send those to podcast@bigplanetcomics or leave a message on our post-apocalyptic hotline at 1-703-539-CAST. You may get radiation poisoning, but that is 1-703-539-CAST.
Nice.
Indeed. All right, so I guess we're going to just get right into these reviews, unless you guys got any special business going on.
man.
No special business. All right, let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
All right, this episode's going to be like 15 minutes long.
We should do it.
I just thought of something. We should read the new Scott Lobdell Superman issue when he takes over.
We should, or we
should
might
not
want to. Yeah.
Didn't he write number zero?
Oh, he did.
He did. Did
too late.
Did you rate it?
Was that the rating? It was like issue 13, and they said, we'll call this issue zero instead. Yeah,
issue negative 100 million. Negative 9,000. It's under 9,000. All right, so up first, I think we had a book that we all really like. This is Broxo graphic novel. This is a new book, a new kid's book, with some maybe not so kid stuff in it. But this is put out by First Second and is written and drawn by, to me, a newcomer. It says it's his first graphic novel, yep. Zach Giolongo. Yeah. Or Giolongo.
I actually saw this guy at SBX while we were there. Like, yep. I just walked past his table and I saw the cover. Just like, that looks awesome. I was like, can I get that? And he's like, no, it's not out yet. I'm like, why do you even have it here?
He should
like, you can win it in a scavenger hunt. And I was like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, he should. Well, he should have pulled a Joe Flood, which last year he had the same deal, right? He had orcs, but he wasn't allowed to sell. But he was like selling like drawings, and then you get a free copy of it.
Yeah, right. Oh, really? Yeah, because awesome. You're not allowed to sell it. But
what a good
price. I flipped through it and I was like, we need to get this. And he was really nice. And he said, you know, if you ever need somebody to come in for a signing, give me a call. So maybe we should give him a call.
We should be giving him a call.
We should.
He was amazing.
He was a nice guy.
Yeah, he's. I don't know if he's a nice guy or not, but he wrote a really good book.
He also drew a great book. So Broxo, this is another fantasy novel setting sort of thing. Like Kevin said, it's sort of for kids. I'd say more like almost a young adult target audience because it's... The characters in it are both very young, particularly Broxo, who's the boy in this, is like even more immature than the main female character.
Yeah, I'd say he's like 13, and then Zora
is like 16, 17, 18.
Or 15. Oh, yeah. Well, hopefully she's 18, because there's a weird nude scene in this book.
No. Oh, yeah.
But,
well, she's not naked.
Yeah, but there's this... Okay, so there's a part in this book. I'm just going to get this out of the way, because it fucked me.
The bathing scene?
She's bathing, and then... So, before they show her... above the water bathing, there's like a shot of her naked bottom half, just where her like stuff is covered by a shadow, and it seemed really weird to me.
I thought it was kind
of
tasteful.
I thought it was a really cool picture.
You mean,
but yeah.
Yeah, tasteful as far as nude pictures of underage girls go.
No, she's 18.
Yeah. Well, okay, we'll say she's 18.
It says right there, all people portrayed in this fantasy world are at least 18.
But anyway, but what the book is about is
all right, so basically, the Zora character, everyone in this entire series knows how to fight, which is awesome. So Zora is a princess from one of the five tribes, and it quickly comes out that she is off on a solitary quest that she's kind of given herself to prove herself to her family.
Kind of a diplomatic mission that she sets for herself.
So there's this race of Alderaanians. No. But so one of the other tribes she has to go find that no one's made contact with. Basically, her tribe is making the goal of we should all start working together. So they're like the good, peaceful tribe. Or, I don't know, commercial tribe. I don't know. Weird. Anyway, empire in progress.
Capitalist tribe. Yeah.
She's the 1%. So she is off and by herself, and although she can fight and has a sword and all kinds of cool armor, she is very quickly in over her head and realizes it's very hard to do this by herself, and she ends up on top of this mountain where there's a legendary fifth tribe that no one has seen in a long time, where she runs into Broxo, who is a wild, I'd say feral almost, warrior kid.
Yeah. Well, and the reason she's there in the first place is kind of like... Nobody in her family pays any attention to her. So she went out to do this on her own, thinking that if she could find this legendary tribe and bring them into the fold, that her parents would notice her more.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a good way to do it, by running away.
By running away to the most dangerous place in the world.
Yes. So quickly she finds out that Broxo is perhaps one of the last people living around here. There's no record of the tribe she's looking for. There are monsters and undead zombies and witches and all kinds of crazy stuff all over the place, and it's very, very dangerous.
Yeah, and Broxo is a very fun character. He's like... He's
like a Conan as a kid.
Yeah.
Wow, good description.
He's like a young savage, but he's like sort of like a cross between like Conan and like Aang from Avatar or something like that, because he's very like fun-loving, goofy kind of...
I would go with Dragon Ball Z.
Well, yeah. Well, Aang is basically Goku.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going back to the source.
And Zora is Zuko.
No, Zora is definitely not Zuko.
My parents.
My dad. It's a really fun book. So that's kind of the setup. And
that's
then,
the very beginning. Yeah, like you find out some of that over time, but there's a much, you know, there's a big story of what she's trying to do and what happens to all these people and all these monsters and why there's zombies running around. And
she develops a very like romantic slash platonic friendship with Broxo. And
his giant snow beast.
Oh, yeah. So cool.
Follows him around.
Not Appa, but, you know.
Yeah, right.
But, and... Yeah, I mean, and then from there it kind of turns into like a crazy action comic where they're fighting zombies and, you know, there's some weird kind of just stuff where they're going on like small adventures in the middle too, where they're like getting honey.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But there's like a story behind every adventure. There's
every
like kind
weird
of
little thing that happens.
Everything's kind of interconnected. And the one thing that surprised me a lot about this book, it's kind of like lighthearted parts and really serious other parts. Like it's got a good balance. And then, but. It's got, like, some intense, like, scenes of violence.
That's definitely true. I mean, there are some eviscerations.
Yeah, like, some zombies get stabbed through the eyes. There's a part where a horse is getting...
Oh, yeah.
...is been killed and being dragged through the woods by its neck by, like, a beast.
But none of it's gratuitous. Like, that scene with the horse is sort of meant to show how Broxo is more of a savage. And
how wild the area is.
Yeah, and how she's, like, the complete opposite of that.
No, I never felt it was out of place.
You know? Yeah, and the art in this is very cartoony. It reminds me of Faith Erin Hicks a lot.
Yes.
Which is definitely a good thing. You know, it's got a very, very Disney influence. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the art in a book that we talked about called Siegfried.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really, really enjoyed it.
The thing I would say this in, like, the tone and all the story and, like, the sudden directions that all fit together later, this is like a Pixar movie. It's very well thought out. Everything comes together. And it's awesome.
I can see that. It has a really strong emotional core.
Yes.
And it's like one of those things where... It doesn't really hit you until the end of the book, which wraps up really well. I thought some of the resolution of the main story, which I don't want to say too much about, was a little muddy. It kind of gets resolved twice in a weird way.
Yeah, right. Huh.
But I don't want to say what, because it's kind of the big reveal at the end. Yeah. But
I will say I was, again, towards the end, I'm like, this can go very dark. Like at the ending. So
yeah, well, and it does a little bit. But overall a good book, maybe not for like the really young crowd.
That's
like
what I said, young adult, I think.
13 and up.
Yeah,
I
like
think
challenging
is good.
For young kids.
Like but. Like if your kid, I mean, mostly it's probably gonna be adults reading this, but if your kid has read like Bone and then maybe moved on to Amulet and they're looking
for something next,
I think this could be pretty interesting.
And I mean, I wouldn't even mind, you know, if I had a kid I wouldn't really be too upset about, but I could see that. You know,
there's elements you should be aware of, but other than that, it's great.
There is some heavy duty violence, but a good book that we would all recommend.
Yes, one of the best.
So up next, speaking of violence, we've got Daredevil End of Days number one.
Hoo ha!
There's definitely some violence in this. So this, so I'm gonna explain this creator list here.
Please do.
Okay, so this book is written by Brian Michael Bendis and David Mack. Mm-hmm. Which already threw me off at the beginning because I thought this was written by Bendis and drawn by David Mack.
Right.
But so this is co-written by them, who worked on the second volume of Bendis's Daredevil called Echo.
Yeah.
Or maybe the first volume of his. No, I think it was the second of his.
Second or third, but...
Anyway, they worked on that together. And then this is drawn by Klaus Janson, mm-hmm. who's probably more known as an inker, but definitely drew some comics back in the 80s a good bit. And then it's all finished by Bill Sienkiewicz. So he puts his sort of signature stamp on the whole book.
Yeah.
And some of it looks very Sienkiewicz-y, and then some of it looks very Janson-y.
Yeah.
But the balance is good enough. It's weird because... Also, at the same time, I feel like it looks a lot like Alex Maleev.
A little bit at times.
Just
maybe
in its
the coloring or the, the shading.
It doesn't have as much of that photo referencing kind of thing going on, though.
No, definitely not that. I think it's just some of the coloring and stuff like that. It's definitely...
It's kind of like the inks that fill in, like, a lot of the shading is very Maleev.
It feels like a Daredevil comic from, like, the late 80s.
Mixed with sort of Bendis's run as well.
Like maybe Frank Miller a little bit.
So people were asking me about this book today, and would you say that this is sort of Daredevil the End?
Yes.
Like similar to Hulk the End or
Fantastic
Four
the End.
It's not really going to spoil anything, but Daredevil dies in the first like three pages or whatever.
He is put through the head with his own
baton.
By Bullseye.
Yeah. He's hoisted on his own batons.
and so the story from there on shifts to
Ben Urich,
and he's writing the last story about Daredevil / Matt Murdock, and
sort of for the failing Daily Bugle.
Yeah,
which that was pretty cool.
And he starts finding out there's a lot more to Daredevil's apparent death than was believed before.
But at the same time, it's also providing a framework of how did Daredevil get to this point and what crazy things have happened in the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, because it's way in the future.
And there is certainly one crazy thing that happens that I think is more of a spoiler than telling people that Daredevil dies at the beginning.
End of the issue.
Like right before that when they show what he did. Before.
That's what I mean. The end where you're like, whoa!
That
part was crazy.
It's pretty crazy. And then you also find out that right before Daredevil died, which everybody videotaped on their iPhones.
Right.
Or
but that I thought was hilarious. Everyone in that picture is using like a 1960s camera. There are no cell phones.
Weird.
They're all like reporters.
There are a lot of people with fancy cameras.
Probably Klaus Janson and Bill Sienkiewicz don't have phones that take pictures.
There's one guy with a camera phone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's really weird. But anyway.
That was hilarious.
And it ends up Daredevil said this a word before he died. And so Ben Urich is kind of, he's trying to figure out what
he's
that
citizen
is.
Citizen caning the event.
And actually at one point he even says he's talking to a guy, he says, what do you think the word means? And he's like, I don't know, was it his sled? Which, spoiler, if you guys haven't seen Citizen Kane, sorry.
Oh, and there's there's a bunch of other mysteries set up too. There's like a chunk of time missing from Daredevil's life that's kind of been a mystery.
That's what I mean. Like the framework is like he will probably fill in some of this crazy stuff that Ben Urich knows and just we don't yet. So
So I think that kind of it's funny because it starts being at the beginning, it's so much about Daredevil, but then it becomes really just like a book about investigative journalism and the decline of the newspaper industry and stuff. And it actually, I thought it was really interesting.
I did too. I thought it was really good.
It builds a lot up on Bendis's run when he was writing Daredevil. It actually, I feel like part of this is actually from that. Because they reference a lot of stuff that happened during his run. And so I feel kind of this is like, Bendis is like, here's what would have happened if I would have kept writing Daredevil.
Yeah, like here's what would have happened at the end of my run if I had kept writing Daredevil.
Yeah, if I could do whatever I want. Like if I could kill Daredevil, blah, 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 you know.
So in a lot of ways, it's an Elseworlds story or whatever Marvel calls that. But
what if?
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. What if? But an interesting book. It's weird to me that this is 8 parts. I'd be curious to see how they're going to fill up 8 issues with this story.
Well, they've got the 3 things. They got the framework, the flashbacks of what Daredevil's been up to, and also the mystery of why he died in that way. And stuff,
also another mystery that pops up at the very end where I was like, wait, what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We'll see where this goes. But all in all, I think a fairly interesting first issue.
Very interesting.
I will say Klaus Janson art. His art feels a little dated and a little
stilted,
globby sometimes. But Sienkiewicz just finishes, give it a really interesting sheen that just to me makes the whole book seem a little bit cooler.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a good gossipy Klaus Janson story.
Sure, to break us off something.
So speaking of John McCrae, when I mentioned my terrible con stories of John McCrae threatening me, I had actually spoken to John McCrae earlier at that convention before he was so drunk. Where he had mentioned that he had drawn Hulk the End or like a 2-part Hulk story. I don't know, it was like around 99
or 98.
He definitely
did not draw Hulk the End.
No, whatever he did. It was like a 2-part Hulk thing. And it was going to be published as like, a 48-page album in France or something. So he's just trying to do a really good job on it. And apparently the second issue, Klaus Janson was the inker and ignored his pencils for several pages and just drew it his own way.
Wow.
I bet it looked better.
No, it didn't. Well, but anyway, so McCrae comes into the Marvel office or wherever he was, and Janson was apparently in the building. He was just like screaming for him. He was like, where's Klaus Janson? He like snuck out a different door.
Klaus Janson, not to to make this the anti-Klaus Janson podcast or anything, but I remember when the Marvel Knights stuff was coming out, which is kind of where Joe Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti got their start drawing like Daredevil and Ghost Rider and the kind of, I don't know what you would call them, the darker Marvel characters.
Yeah, right.
But there was a miniseries that was drawn by Eduardo Risso that Brian Azzarello wrote. I think it was Brian Azzarello that wrote it. It might have been Joe Quesada or Jimmy Palmiotti. But anyway, it was just called Marvel Knights, and it was all these characters together a team. Yeah. And Risso did the art, but it was inked by Klaus Janson.
Wow.
And it looked like it was drawn by like Dan Jurgens. Because Janson just turned it into like a very basic, you would never guess that it was drawn by Eduardo.
That's crazy.
But anyway, so that's Daredevil End of Days number 1.
There you go. Check it out.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. All right, so up next we have Detective Comics number 13. This is by John Layman and an artist I don't know, Jason Fabok.
Nope, Fabok.
Fabok. I don't think. But anyway, the reason we're talking about this is because
to our fine listener requests. Asking for covering of New Directions in
books? Sure, that's what we're doing.
Yeah, we've been doing that anyway.
But so John Layman is the new writer on Detective Comics, taking over for
somebody
at some point it was Tony Daniels.
Yeah. But anyway, if you listened in the past, you know we weren't huge fans of Detective Comics leading up to this, but so John Layman takes over this issue. He's the guy that wrote Chew, and he wrote podcast favorite Godzilla, Gangsters, and Goliaths, which is a great Godzilla comic. And and he is now writing Detective Comics, and this book just leveled up. It's a really good issue.
Where the blue blazes did this artist come from?
Yeah,
I feel like I've seen something he drew before, but I can't remember what it was, but... Lord.
He has a really detailed art style. It kind of reminds me of Andy Clark, who's actually the guy that drew the backup in this. And we'll talk about the backup in this as well, which was incredible. Also,
but it's very clean. It's just a good art style. I don't know.
Yeah,
it fits in with DC's thing, but
yeah, DC's house style, but like really well done.
So anyway, this issue of Detective Comics starts with Batman kind of trying to get to this fundraiser that he's supposed to be at.
Bruce Wayne.
Well, Bruce Wayne is supposed to be, they're building a building in honor of his mother, right?
Yeah. Okay. So basically, when this starts,
we'll tell you what happens.
They're dedicating a wing of the hospital.
That's what it was.
In the name of Martha Wayne, and Bruce Wayne is supposed to be there, but he's out doing stuff as Batman.
And so the Penguin doesn't want Bruce Wayne there, so he hires these assassins to kill Bruce Wayne. And it's funny because he gets a chance to kill Batman in the beginning, and he's like, no, we're not after Batman today. it kind of goes back and forth between Penguin's weird plan, which you're not sure of, and Batman's attempt to get to the event. And he's being distracted by all these crimes that are maybe tied to what Penguin is doing.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, that's the basic premise.
Yeah, that's the basic thing. And then you kind of find out why the Penguin is doing this, which is a really funny,
pretty awesome.
Political, ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
But it's a good story that feels very much like what I think of when I think of a Batman story. Like, this feels very much like it could be an episode of like Batman the Animated series or something like that. I mean, it's a little bit darker than that maybe, but overall, like, it's really well paced. Yeah. And is this the first superhero thing that John Layman's written?
I can't remember. I feel like he's done something else, but
it's the first kind of big book I read. Yeah. Like, he's never been on a book this big before, as far as I can remember.
Definitely.
And he really handles the characters well. It's probably nice to have a little more of a blank canvas when it comes to characters like the Penguin and stuff who he's kind of reintroducing here.
Right.
But he does a good job with Batman. He does a good job with the Penguin, and he just, like, you get a good sense of Gotham and like the crime sort of underground in
elements
Gotham.
Playing off of each other are really well balanced, and like switching back and forth between a lot of characters and like storylines, and they all fit together well.
And that also lends itself to the backup story in this as well, which is this kind of
so good.
Yeah, the kind of thing that you always want from a backup story, which is just this these two criminals. This is also written by John Layman, but with art by Andy Clark, who's fantastic.
Yeah.
Who drew, we were trying to remember, Rebels, right?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. And Aquaman.
Yeah, he has a very detailed art style. Kind of, if people remember, Travis Charest, is that his name?
Yeah.
Who drew Wildcats. I'd say Andy Clark is the closest thing to that's been around.
He's
in a
great.
While. But, so it's the story of these two criminals, and one is sort of teaching the other guy the ropes.
Yeah, well, one guy, they're both career criminals, but one guy grew up in Gotham and the other guy has just moved to Gotham from Miami.
Yeah. So he's teaching them the ropes, so like what it's like to be a criminal in Gotham.
Yep.
Yeah. So they're robbing this place, and he's like, well, don't kill the guard, because if you kill the guard, then we're going to be on Batman's radar. If we just rob this place, it's just a B&E, and we'll be like way down on Batman's list.
Yeah,
and
like
he's not going
to mess
with us.
Get to us. Oh, but they're all corrupt, so they'll never find us.
Right.
And, yeah.
And so that all sort of culminates in this great, like, sort of Twilight. Well, I wouldn't say Twilight Zone, but kind of like an O. Henry type ending.
Yeah.
That's like a really nice twist, and makes for just like a really great solid backup story.
Yeah,
that's really
cool
memorable.
Character stuff. So good.
Yeah. It's like one of those kind of things like people talk about the Grant Morrison, like, that story, like that's just about the henchmen, like yeah. that kind of stuff. Yeah. This felt like that to me. Like,
and this is Penguin's henchman, actually, from the yeah. from the opening story.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Nice. So to see that,
that's awesome.
I love to see that kind of like other side of these worlds. I think right. it really fleshes things out, and I felt like it was a really smart way to do it. And hopefully the backups in the are similar in the rest of Lehman's run, because yes. it was very cool.
That was awesome.
One thing I didn't quite like, oops, the Penguin redesign. I'm not sure if I like that. It's kind of weird.
Is it a little too realistic, you think? Or?
Yeah, he just looks like some dude with a monocle.
He still has a big nose. He reminds me a little bit of the like Norm Breyfogle era Penguin.
And he's got the weird like fur coat, or maybe it's feathers. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I think that's kind of adopted from the Batman Arkham Asylum games, which seems to be
their new...
Yeah.
Well, that's why they redesigned Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
So. He's got mutton chops, which is a little...
I don't want to talk about Harley Quinn's redesign anymore. Yeah. but that's a very small thing, I would say.
Yeah. One thing I'm worried about is that this storyline is 2 issues, and then after that, it's all tied into that big Batman-Joker crossover. Which
oh, really?
Well, but, you know, Scott Snyder's running that crossover, yeah. and now they've got good writers on all their books except yeah. maybe Dark Knight.
Yeah,
and,
the only problem I have with that is, like, John Layman's not really going to get a chance to do his own thing until true. After that. He's going to kind of have to do his own thing by fitting
well,
in, while fitting in.
He can still put a stamp on it.
And he's going to be writing Joker stories. I'm sure he's...
Yeah.
I feel like every comic writer probably has a Joker story yeah, in their brain yeah. that they want to tell. So hopefully that comes through a little bit.
Yeah.
But just as far as this issue, I thought it was really great. I thought it was a really solid Batman issue.
Yes.
All right. So up next, we've got a very, very good book. This is Everything Together. This is a collection of Sammy Harkham short stories that have appeared, I think, in other things like anthologies
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Almost all of them have like dates on them. So this is quite a range of time. It's some stuff from the late 90s even up through very recently.
Yeah, you can definitely see some different art styles. It doesn't look like it's presented chronologically
no,
because definitely one
over.
Of the stories
yeah.
in the middle definitely has an older art style. But overall, this is Sammy Harkham, who is one of the best comic creators around right now,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and, like what would people know him most from? What's his?
I mean, Crickets is his main
Crickets
thing.
Crickets is his ongoing comics title.
He did Crickets 1, 2, and 3.
He also does the Kramer's Ergo anthologies. He started
yeah,
those up.
He was the editor of those.
Awesome.
People might know him from not drawing that second part of the last Optic Nerve issue that looked exactly like Sammy Harkin.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, he's got a really great style, you know, sort of like Kevin Huizenga mixed with EC Segar or something
wow.
like that.
Wow. Yeah, good yeah. point.
But yeah, and all he just tells kind of, you know, personal stories
or just really weird stories.
Or really weird
very stuff. Strong character driven stories where it's like yeah it could be completely off the wall or very simple but just like really interesting characters and the pacing on these is so good. I mean, his cartooning is amazing. Like his drawing style is like Kevin described it. It's just awesome. I love it. But
yeah, so like for example, one of the stories in here is it's about a guy who kind of it seems like he used to be like a sailor or fisherman when he was younger, and he wants to go do that again. So he leaves his wife
you
to
mean,
sort of.
Poor sailor, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Oh, so he my leaves. Favorite thing in this book.
He leaves his wife in the middle of the night to go and become a sailor, and sort of all of her fears about that, which are just sort of implied in the beginning, seem to come true through the story.
Yeah, it's like
how good is that story, dude?
It's so good.
It's weird because it's kind of like not his best arc because it seems like a little earlier.
It's 2004,
but it's
2003.
Just so well paced and put together that it doesn't matter. It's just
and
it's so great.
You've got like 4 panels on each page, so in a lot of times he's just showing like a very long period of time when this guy's off on his voyages around the world, where a little just one panel will show a single drawing, and from that it's just like you know inferring how much stuff has just happened, like. There's one scene where he's in like one of those old timey punishment blocks the Chinese use, where like you lock.
It's yeah,
like,
it's
you
like
know,
a part of
the
a
stocks
montage.
Where it's like your head and your hands, and it's got all the writing.
Stocks,
on it.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's just a montage of all this crazy stuff, and then it'll go through like 3 or 4 panels of like really intense moments happening, or like
yeah.
really quiet moments, and like him traveling with his brother.
It's really crazy and intense.
He does really
great stuff with pacing. Like you know, he'll just have a panel that's just empty, but it lends itself so well to the story, and it's like. Really well done. So that's like the one that's maybe
probably the longest, just because it's 4 panels per page.
That's not the longest.
I think there's a story in here called Somersaulting.
The Enis.
That one's
Enis
really
one.
Long.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And that story was probably those two together make up you know 60% of this book, I'd
yeah.
say. And the Alicia or what is the story called? Somersaulting with the character yeah. Iris. Is that her
Enis,
name?
Enis.
Yeah. That's. No, it's Iris. Yeah, that story is also great. It's kind of like about a girl who seems like a little bit disconnected and can't really sustain a genuine relationship with anybody.
Ghost worldy.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. But, yeah, but not as affected as somebody like Enid, who was very much like an archetypical 90s.
Yeah, and this is much more like a kind of disaffected teenager who's not. I don't know. Like, she's got a really close friend and a boy she's kind of dating, but
getting drunk with her best friend and.
Yeah, and she just seems to be, kind of aimless.
Yeah.
And that's basically what the story is about. But everything about the way he tells the story lends itself to that. Yeah. Like the whole thing feels very desolate, and like all the characters are very small in the panels. They just feel like they feel kind of lost within the story in a way that's really interesting, I feel like.
Yeah.
And, that's just kind of the way he does stuff. I don't know. Yeah. It's a really great book. And there, even some of the other stuff, like there's some pinups, some very like sinister pinups, like just like living rooms where there are like people with masks and knives and
walking
stuff
towards
like
someone else in the background.
That seems a little more like his cricket stuff. Like if you guys remember the last cricket story.
Oh, and like a crazy Where the Wild Things Are page.
Oh, yeah.
He does a lot of pages too, like where he'll do like huge amounts of panels on it to tell a huge story on a single page or a few pages. And
that Where the Wild Things Are thing is like insane. It's like so different than everything else in the book. But anyway, this is just a really good anthology
super
collection
solid,
of Harkham stuff. And I don't know if anything in here to me is as solid as his story about the movie director in Crickets 3, which I think is probably still the best thing he's ever done.
Really.
But the two main stories in here
are
so very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so obviously we like that a good bit.
Highest recommendation.
All right, so up next we've got a slightly more uneven anthology. This is Legends of the Dark Knight number one. So this has three stories in it. One is by Damon Lindelof and Jeff Lemire, which is, an all-star team there. One's by Jonathan Larson, who I don't know, but with art by J.G. Jones, who's does a killer job. And then one is by Tom Taylor, who I also don't know, and art by Nicola Scott, who also does a good job.
Didn't Tom Taylor just write that one we reviewed last week where we're like, who is this guy, Tom Taylor? Oh, I can't remember what it was, but it was like a week or two ago.
Tom the Toolman Taylor?
No.
I'm not sure. But
Tommy Taylor from Unwritten? Is that his name?
Because we were talking about that. Yeah, so I don't know what he wrote. But anyway,
I'll look it up. Keep going.
Let's go through each of these stories. So,
let's do it.
Yeah. What should we say? What did you guys think about this?
My main thing about this is like this was. Did these all run online? As like
I think
a
these were all web
comics.
Yeah, these were all web comics. Yeah.
Like these are all really good writers, and obviously they're having a lot of fun doing Batman. And some of these are great stories. But for me, I enjoyed them all. They all seemed a little off as a Batman. It's just like a lot of them. Like the tone of Batman just seemed a little like. They didn't quite get it, or they're just doing it not the way you expect. Well, which it doesn't always bad, but just it seemed a little off.
Yeah, they all seem to not take place in the normal Batman universe.
Right. Which is fine, It's like, I think of like that, like Batman the Dark Knight animated thing that had a bunch of different...
Tom Taylor wrote the Rose and Thorn one-shot.
Oh, which was pretty solid.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. And his story... Let's do the Damon Lindelof, Jeff Lemire story last, because I have a lot of stuff to say about this story. But, so the second story in here is J.G. Jones doing art, and his art looks great in this. It's like J.G. Jones, but the color palette reminds me a lot like Kevin Nolan, in a very cool way. And it's just a story about how Batman hates being in space.
Yeah.
And
I don't know, hates being in space. I thought that was a...
He says he hates being in space.
Oh, yeah. But it's like more like how Batman can put up with a crazy situation and
No, that's true. Yeah. But
very
it's,
like old school Grant Morrison.
Like they said it, space, and then Batman says, I hate space.
Yeah.
Right.
Does this place
and he hates
place
teleporters.
In the new 52? Does it say that on the cover?
I don't think any
I
of that
doubt
matters.
It does,
it does not say new 52 on the
cover. Oh, interesting.
But yeah, because I think some of this probably ran before that. I'm not exactly sure about the timeline for the web stuff. But yeah, so it's basically about Batman just being in the Justice League Watchtower and fighting Amazo.
Yeah, that's about it.
But it felt like a throwback to the early, was it the White Martian storyline under Grant Morrison in the relaunch or the JLA from the 90s, where it's like Batman on his own just showing that he's Batman and can do awesome things.
I
can definitely see
on that.
That
level, if you just want to see Batman kicking butt and doing it by himself, this is great.
But sort of it's also very internal of like Batman being like, hey, I'm way out of my element in this kind of situation. So there's that story, and then there's the last story, which is you know, I can't even remember what it's about. It's like about like a guy that robbed a place and then they had a shotgun and then they find it and then they get
that,
it.
Okay, that one I think was for me one of the, maybe not as weird as the first one, but it's like Batman and Robin are like trying to prevent crime and do some weird stuff, and it's just like they do stuff and then you're like, why did they do that and why are you leaving it in this situation and what are you trying to
It felt very strange. I'm like didn't flow together very well at all.
I'm trying not to spoil what happens because that's the only interesting resolution.
Well, you can spoil it if you want because I'm going to spoil the first story
also,
like crazy.
What Robin is this?
It's Tim Drake. It's Robin from the Robin 2 miniseries.
Tim Drake?
I think, wasn't that Tim Drake?
Tim Drake was never Robin.
No, he was.
Right? Oh, yeah. Well, see, that's probably why it doesn't say New 52. But ignoring that, it's definitely Robin from like 1996
something. Let me spoil it. So basically, this guy is deciding to become a robber to try to get money for his sick family. And Batman and Robin are like, we've used our detective skills to find out you're about to become a criminal, but your heart's not in it. You're not going to hurt anybody, and you might get killed doing it. So to teach you a lesson, we're going to prevent you from doing it and leave you stuck up on this roof.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm just like, what? Like, I understand, like, trying to talk him out of it, but, like, he's still like, my family's still really sick, and is like, later, I'm millionaire Bruce Wayne secretly. I'm not going to, you know, there's no throwaway line of, like, you know, donation left for the family.
No,
or
they're like, he's like, my daughter, she's still sick. What do I do? How do I get down from this roof? And Robin and Batman are both like, work it out.
Yeah.
They're just like, swing away.
They're like, but later, chum. You know, it's just,
Is the whole story
figured out.
Is the whole story worth it for that panel where Robin's like holding a shotgun?
Yes.
That was pretty cool.
Okay, so that's
anyway.
That's that story. But let's talk about this first story.
Opening story.
So I was I was excited.
How incredible is this?
I'm cracking up just thinking about it.
I see that it's, you know, Damon Lindelof who wrote Lost,
who's
which I like.
Ruined several things.
People say that. I don't really know what he's ruined, but what?
I'll come up with a list. What was the last movie he wrote?
Prometheus. I like Prometheus. But anyway, he also worked on Lost. He wrote
Did you see the end of Lost?
I did see the end of Lost. But he also wrote what I thought was the very good Ultimate Hulk versus Wolverine miniseries.
Which is great. Mm-hmm. And Star Trek.
Yep, and Star Trek, which I also liked a good bit. So and Jeff Lemire is doing art in this, who I love from Sweet Tooth. And I love the Essex County stories. And Underwater Welder is probably the best graphic novel of the year.
Yep.
So very excited going in.
Right.
So this is a story about Batman. I think it's Batman.
Well, see, I went into this thinking more of like a Strange Tales type story, and you know? So like I feel like I read it differently.
You're a little prepared for it.
Okay, well, even if it's it's still dumb. So basically, Batman is like stopping this crime, but it ends up that it's these people and they're impersonating him when he was little. And his parents, as they're being, like, from the scene where they were murdered when he was a little kid.
Yep.
And so they beat the crap out of him. And then there's, like, and then it switches to Alfred explaining to him what happened. And then Alfred is like, oh, I hired those people to beat you up. And then I took a dollar out of your bat belt.
Well, it goes.
Did I miss something in between those two things?
Yeah, I think you skipped a couple pages. Cause,
did you not get the early point where he and Alfred and Bruce Wayne are arguing that Batman has no weaknesses?
Right. Yeah. Sure.
No, so that's it.
That wasn't enough of an explanation for me.
Like Bruce
Why
Wayne,
did he take the money out of his belt then?
Because it was a bet. He's like, I bet you a dollar.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Well, Bruce Wayne gets, he gets.
Perfect sense, right?
He gets beat up by these guys, like this dwarf who's pretending he's a little kid and like
pretending he's young Bruce Wayne,
and they're like, they beat him up and he's like, who could have done this? Which one of my enemies could have done this?
Right.
And he's like, who knows that Batman is Bruce Wayne? And he's like, oh no. And then he remembers that earlier, I guess this is early in his career, but it's like really funny because he's like, I can't fly or run fast. I don't have a magic ring that makes giant green, I don't know, imaginary crap. And he's like talking about how like, he's like, but I'm better than all of those guys. He's like, because I always win and nothing could ever. But it's not like in a normal like way. He's just like, I'm just awesome.
Right.
Yep.
And then like Alfred's like, I bet you're not. I bet you a dollar that somebody that you have a weakness. And so his weakness is that he's hung up on the death of his parents.
He's horribly crippled by his
parents. It ends on the image of Batman beaten to a bloody pulp on the ground while Alfred's taking money out of his utility belt.
Yep.
It's the weirdest.
He comes up and takes the dollar out, and he's like, everyone has a vulnerability, yes? And he's like, yes. Let's draw you that hot bath, shall we?
So I guess I missed the panel where he said that he bet him a dollar. So at the end, I thought, like I got that Alfred was saying you have a vulnerability, and this is why I was doing that. But I thought he was just taking a dollar just to be a dick. He's like, and you know what? Give me a dollar. Get out of here, you dumb dumb.
No, see, that's why when I was reading, I felt like it was like a Strange Tales thing. So that was supposed to be kind of like goofy and funny.
I don't think it's supposed to be. I think it's not very funny. I think it's supposed to be like really cool. Nobody ever thought of this before.
I don't think it's supposed to be. It just seems so goofy. And like the dialogue is really funny.
But I don't think it's supposed to be funny.
And Bruce Wayne is drunk.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a serious scene.
I don't think it
is. Like when Jack gets drunk on Lost.
Nah, the way that he says like. He's like, I don't like that imaginary crap. I'm Batman. I'm better than everybody else.
Yeah, he's a cool dude, man.
He's like, I always win.
Anyway, so that's the Legends of the Dark Knight thing. It's almost like a thing to behold.
It is.
I don't know.
I love it. It's great.
Yeah, the last story you didn't love. Hmm? You didn't love the last story.
Well, no. I love the first one.
And the middle one's actually a fun story.
Fun,
and
it's Batman,
like it's really well colored and and it's just fun. But I don't know. This whole thing was so goofy. I mean, I love the first story too,
but in a very different way.
I love it in this. You know, it's a weird thing. All right, so the last book this week is called The Now of Brown.
N-A-O
of Brown.
Yeah. This is another awesome one that was floating around SPX. Who's this by?
Glenn Dillon.
And this is published by Nobrow. This is Self-Made Hero.
Indeed.
Another of the breakout British publishers.
This is Nobrow, Blank Slate, Chalkboards. There's just so many of them
good
now.
Publisher dudes.
So this is Self-Made Hero, who have done, they did like the At the Mountains of Madness.
The Sherlock Holmes books.
And a few other things. But
are they doing Chalkmarks? Is that them? Or is that?
No, Chalkmarks is Blank Slate.
Ugh, too many publishers.
Yeah. Because Chalkmarks, Blank Slates.
Dude, what the hell?
Yeah, so Now of Brown is...
what the hell? This book is just
It's really good. It's already, for me, up there with the best graphic novels of the year.
Wow. Yeah, man, the art is in this... it's got this watercoloring that's like reminds me of Black Sad a little bit, just like... It's just so good.
Yeah, so the basic story is about this girl, Now Brown, who's half Japanese, half British, living in England, and she works at a designer toy shop. And kind of, you know, she kind of has like a mental problem where
she's got like an OCD kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's like that. It's like a weird. She has like morbid obsession, or I can't remember what it's called. But like basically, whenever she's talking to somebody, she like flashes to ways she could like kill them, or like ways they would die whenever she's doing anything.
And she does that thing where she says like, "What level of uncomfortableness she is at?" So she's always like 7 out of 10,
7 out of 10, 9 out of 10. It seems to always be at least a 7 out of 10.
Yeah,
but she kind of gets a job at this toy shop and meets this guy who's like a washing machine repair man who looks like this toy that she's obsessed with,
this like anime that she loves.
Yeah, and so she so to meet him again, she destroys her washing machine at her house to meet him, and they kind of start dating a little bit, and then from there
it gets crazier and crazier as it goes along. It's mixed together with this story of this. It's really weird. There's
the side story is a little too complicated to explain, but basically, throughout this book, there are these one page intermissions that are these that have like a totally different art style.
I feel like they're tied to the anime that she watches.
It seems that way. Yeah. It's about this guy Prince Picrod, I think his name is, who's like a walnut for head.
Yeah.
The art in that part is very like Mobius. Almost.
It's so crazy. It's like. The coloring on it, God.
Yeah, it's so good. And so, it's a crazy book. I don't know if we should say too much more about what happens later in the book.
Well, yeah, without giving too much away, you kind of get an insight into, like, what exactly her problem is and how she could possibly deal with it. And that kind of comes through with her relationship with this guy and kind of his problems. And it's interesting. And it has a very satisfying ending. It's good. I never really figured out how these little interludes tie in, but they're also awesome.
But they're also awesome on their own. Yeah, it's like it almost doesn't matter. I think it may have something to do because there's a point in it where they're watching like a trailer for this anime, and I think that might be what that's about.
Yeah, the last part of it definitely has a lot to. It ties in a lot better, yeah.
Yeah, but overall, it's a really cool book. It's almost hard to explain what's so good about it. It's
just look at it.
Yeah,
just great.
Yeah, just look at it. I mean, the art is perfectly rendered. The coloring is great. The water coloring is fantastic. Reminds me a little bit of like Jiro Taniguchi.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's always a good thing.
Yeah.
And the personalities are all so well defined for every character.
That's
in
the thing, especially now. And I feel like a lot of times main characters can be a little bit of just like, you know, a vehicle to move a story along.
Right.
But I feel like she has a very complex personality that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And even kind of her like mental problems aren't, they're done in a very, I don't want to say like a realistic way, but like a very well thought out way.
Yeah,
and
no,
it all seems very true. And like the whole book seems very honest, like in a way that's really great. And yeah, I mean, it's so good. And to, you know, it's written and drawn by the same guy, which is, you know,
amazing.
Yeah, which is amazing when you think about it. Yeah. And I don't know, it's just a really well done story.
Definitely one of the best things of the year.
Yeah, it's got a really awesome cover too. Washing machines are a motif in this.
This
comic, but it's really good, and I think it'll probably make it on our best of the year list. We'll see, but it's good stuff.
It's up there right now.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this episode. This was a lot longer than I thought it was going
to
be.
We like to jibber jabber.
Yeah, we definitely did some jibber jabber and some gimgon. But we'll see you guys next time. Unless you guys got any other important info to give to people.
Frank Cho is doing a Wolverine book.
Important info.
Connor Williamson's doing a Wolverine book too.
No, yes.
Yeah. But anyway, all right. We'll see you guys next time.
See ya.